How many of you appreciate the comedy of Monty Python? Oh, good. All right, so I think it's in the Search for the Holy Grail. When confronted with danger, a dangerous situation, or something that is otherwise unknown, the comedy of Monty Python tells us to run away, run away, run away, right? Is that good advice? You might not see it, but in this morning's Bible reading, that actually happened. Jesus was gearing up to start. It doesn't say Jesus was gearing up to start, but Jesus heard that his cousin had been arrested. But Jesus was going to call disciples. He was going to preach and teach and heal. And then that happened to John. And Jesus ran away. He got right out of Dodge. He left his hometown, which was near the government center, and he went to Capernaum, a more remote sea village that had easier escape routes from the authorities. The authorities didn't care too much about Capernaum. Of course, we could look at it and say that it was so wise of Jesus to start in the rural areas. It was wise for him to preach and to teach and to heal in the country so that he could build a following that would last after Jesus was gone. That's looking at it in retrospect and wanting to put wisdom into Jesus' head there instead of Jesus going, great, now what? My plans, they're ruined. I'm going to have to rearrange everything. John got arrested. It's going to be really hot for me in the city. That is not going to work. That would be better, of course, because more people, but I'm going to have to get out of Dodge and start doing the thing that I'm going to do in a whole different way. So Jesus ran away. And sure, he started. He didn't run far, far, far. But he ran away from what was probably the better course, the way to reach more people. Do you ever get the idea that we are all running away from something? Or maybe we're all running towards something. Or maybe we're just standing there wondering what to do next. Jesus, I think, wondered what to do next. And he ran away from his hometown. And he ran toward a more rural Capernaum. So I guess he did all three. And there, but here's the part of the story that we all remember. Jesus found some fishermen. No, these were not ordinary fishermen, except that they were. They were just ordinary fishermen. Two young brothers casting a net into the sea, and Jesus came up and told them to follow him. And they dropped their nets and followed him, which is extraordinary, right? Why wouldn't they be extraordinary people if they recognized Jesus right away and said, yes, we will follow you, just like that? Why would anybody do that? Would you drop your nets and follow somebody? Maybe they knew someone extraordinary was in their midst. Maybe they got it. They're like, this is Jesus. This is the one. This is the one who's going to save us. This is the one who has come to change everything. Except if you looked at the example that they give throughout time after that, they didn't get it at all. They kept asking questions. They kept getting it wrong. Peter was like, they didn't get it. They were ordinary people who did something, they did something extraordinary. I've told this part of the story before, and I hope that you remember it, and if you don't, I hope you get it this time. Simon and Andrew were in the family business. They probably were, no more than 14 years old. Soon after their bar mitzvah, when they would have entered into the family business, they were now men, and no rabbi had invited them to become disciples. Because the rabbis would go around and they would find young men around the time of their bar mitzvah, and they would pick the cream of the crop. You're going to follow me. And of course, if a rabbi came and picked you, you would go with them. That was one of the highest honors ever. But Simon and Andrew weren't in the group that were picked by the rabbis. They were not the most likely to succeed as a disciple. They were cast off. They were the rejected. And I think they wished that they would have been called by a rabbi. And then one came along. They didn't know Jesus from anyone, really. They just knew that he was a rabbi. Maybe it was how he was dressed. Maybe it was how he was talked. Maybe word had spread a little bit as he came toward this small fishing village. And when the rabbi called, you can imagine they said, we're not rejects. The rabbi has called us. Dad, we're going. Our dream is coming true. They dropped everything and followed him because that's what you did when a rabbi called. And then Jesus showed his wit. You're casting nets for fish. Follow me and we'll cast nets to catch people. All right, if you think about that one, it's clever. It's a nice quip. But that comparison is really awful. You're going to catch people? You're going to catch them and kill them and gut them and sell them at market. Okay, Jesus didn't want to do that. And I'm sure it's more of a quick thinking thing. I love to do puns and everything, and I love the quick response. And they don't always work. This one has some staying power because it got the song. You want to sing it? I will make you
fishers.
Did you not know this one? Wow.
Oh, goodness.
So you didn't grow up in the Methodist church. That was it. Okay, Jan and I are going to sing this real quick. It goes like this.
I will make you fishers of men, fishers of men, fishers of men. I will make you fishers of men if you follow me.
And there's more to it. You recognize that song? Raise your hand if you do.
Okay.
So a few of you. Okay. You just didn't want to sing it right now?
Thanks, so, you made me all sing it.
We can't. Oh, I just heard a couple. All right, a couple sing. So it gets the song, and so the story has some real staying power. You like that motion? I will make you fishers of men. Now here's the part that Jesus did get, and it wasn't the pun that kind of falls apart if you take it all the way out there, but he wasn't casting with a pole. It was with nets. And so when he says you're going to catch people, if you ignore the part about gutting and cleaning and all that part, it's not catching one at a time. It's catching them by the thousands. That's the story of Pentecost, when 3,000 people were baptized in one day. So from now on, you'll be catching people. They are going to come to you in droves, just like happens in every church in the country. People arrive by droves because we have our nets cast, right? Okay, and we're kind of in this mode, right? Come on, one at a time. Jesus ran away from his hometown. He ran towards Capernaum, and he called two who had been rejected by the other rabbis. And then he found two others, James and John. Same story, different people, but same results. They were waiting for Jesus. They didn't know exactly who they were waiting for. Jesus came along. But they were waiting to be called by a rabbi. And they may have lost an awful lot of hope not getting chosen before. But when they had a chance to move in a new direction, they did. They had a little bit of hope. They had enough hope that they, the ones who had been rejected, would be chosen. And it happened. This is what Jesus does. It's the example of the Bible. It's the example that continues. It's the reality that continues is that Jesus calls the rejected, the forgotten, the lost, the exploited, the powerless, the ones no one expects to be called. That doesn't mean that if everyone expects you to be called by Jesus that you can't be, but Jesus is really good at calling the ones that everyone looks at and says, not them. And then there's the question. When we're called to follow Jesus, what qualifications do we have to have? Is it important that we understand everything? I heard this while growing up. If you're going to witness for Jesus, you better have your facts straight because you don't want to mislead someone by not knowing everything and making sure that you know everything that you possibly can. That's that whole modern perspective of we want all the answers before we explore anything with anybody else. you don't have to understand it all. You don't have to have some kind of super belief. The disciples certainly did not. You don't have to subscribe completely to the what we believe statements in the Jesus Club. How about instead we have hearts that care? How about instead we know that everyone matters, no matter what, rich or poor, powerful or powerless, lost or found, Democrat or Republican or libertarian or name the party, any color of skin, any location on the planet, any gender, any sexual orientation. It doesn't matter what you've done with your life. Doesn't matter. Because Jesus calls individuals, calls a community, it calls a people who matter. We know that all matter. And even if we don't get that, even if we're not sure if we matter or if all matter, doesn't matter. Because the qualifications to follow Jesus are a willingness to follow Jesus. The qualifications to be kind is a willingness to be kind. The qualifications to show love is a willingness to show love. So I guess there's a little bit of a qualification. When Jesus calls, we have ways to respond, right? We can respond like the comedy of Monty Python and run away. We can stand there wondering what to do. Let me tell you, the church in the United States is pretty good at that, just standing around wondering what to do. What are we going to do? People don't go to church anymore. Let's think about that for a while. Until we're not a church anymore. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? I don't think that run away is the answer. Maybe it is. I don't think that standing still and just hoping that everything gets better is the answer. Maybe a better way to respond is the way that those early disciples did. Simon, Andrew, James and John, they ran towards Jesus immediately. Amen.